Hello, United Podcast Experience listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the United Podcast Experience. Today on the line, we have Isaac Mashman. He's an entrepreneur. He's been around the world. And he's seen a lot of things, but that's enough for me to let Isaac introduce himself.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. I mean, thank you for inviting me on in the first place. It's, you know, I'm very grateful to be here. My name is Isaac Mashman. I'm a 19-year-old entrepreneur, originally from Jacksonville, Florida. And over the past 4 months, I had the opportunity to, travel to California. I lived in California for about 2.5 months, crashing on couches, crashing on my friends' floors, whatever I needed to do. And then afterwards, you know, I decided to take and pack my suitcase and move over to France for a month. And, you know, that's just a very, very, very quick summary. But, I first got introduced to entrepreneurship back in 2017. I was a senior in high school. You know, going into my senior year, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was like, you know what, I could go and do go to school for marketing or real estate, like something business oriented, but everyone and their brothers trying to do something business oriented. Right. And I was like, that just isn't for me. It's not something I'm really passionate about. And in the end, I didn't see myself working for another person. And fast forward, I tried a clothing line, didn't know what I was doing. I started working on like an Instagram page, trying to do the influencer route, didn't focus on that, kind of let that go due to some personal issues. And then I dabbled in network marketing for about a year. I had some really great experiences with the company that I was involved with, tried a couple different companies. I was able to travel a lot because of it, made some really great friends, learned a lot of great skills. And fast forward now, I went ahead and started Mashman Media back in July of 2019.
Man, it's been quite a journey. Let's start from the top, though. That moment of faith, right? Everyone's got to take that in the entrepreneur. What was that like, taking that moment of faith? Saying, I'm going to go out in this world and understand that it's going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it.
Man, there were a couple big moments of faith, I would have to say. And there are also a lot of moments of doubt. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize about entrepreneurship or don't realize about life in general, I don't think, especially young people my age. You know, we think that life is all sunshine and roses. And then we get out in the real world, we get slapped in the face. And that's the beauty behind life, though, because if it was easy, I mean, we really wouldn't have too many great stories to remember it by, right? But in my senior year in high school, I'm not one of those entrepreneurs who can say that, you know, I was a DNF student. I can't say that. School growing up, it was rather easy to me, my mom, you know, she enforced, you know, the values of, hey, you know, you need to go ahead and get a good education, try in school. So I was like a straight A student. You know, I had B's here and there. I had like one C in my entire life. Like, I can't say that I was a horrible student. I was on track to get a full ride scholarship. I got accepted into Florida State University. I got accepted to University of Central Florida on top of a couple other colleges. And for me, whenever I decided and told my parents and told my guidance counselor, I was like, hey, I am not going to college. They were like, what do you mean you're not going to college? You know, you've literally been working your entire life to get up to this point. And I was just like, something's telling me not to do it. And I don't know if it was a sense of rebellion or a sense of confusion, because looking back now, I was in such a weird state of mind. I was in such a weird state just in general with what I had going on. I was like, I just went to college, and I feel like if I went down to college, I would have went down the wrong path. But ultimately, I just knew that I would win and I would succeed regardless. I didn't know how. And there were plenty of moments of just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I've recently had a lot of those moments too, even, you know, fast forward 2 years, but I, you know, that's going to be the case for the rest of my life. I feel like, you know, we're always going to have those moments of certainty, and we're always going to have those moments of like, okay, let's go ahead and take a step back and reflect and, you know, think about what we have going on.
Right. Right. I think it's important that you took that faith and you took that moment of saying, listen, I'm going to step outside my comfort zone a little bit. And what it's been like so far in these 2 years, what's the biggest thing you've learned? Before we even start talking about Mashman Media, just the biggest lesson you learned these 2 years of doubt and reflection, really.
Could you go and repeat that question really quick? Sorry.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no, you're good, man. I said, what's the biggest lesson you've learned in those 2 years of doubt and reflection that you can personally take?
Oh, man, the biggest lesson? I've learned so many lessons, but if I had to pinpoint one, I would say stay true to myself. Mm. And, you know, honestly, don't give up. Just keep persisting, keep moving forward. You know, I've had plenty of moments of, you know, where I feel defeated and I'm confused. But the one thing in my mind is just keep moving forward, keep pressing forward. Because if you stop, if you give up, if you look back and you stop moving forward, you're going to become stagnant and fall behind. And, if you do that, then you're never going to accomplish your dreams, never going to accomplish what you want out of life.
No, absolutely, man. I think it's a great point. I think anybody trying to make it happen, you got to push for it, right? It's the only way up, and it's the only way to get going when the tough gets down.
100%.
So tell me, like, a little bit about the travel. I know you said you just went to California, Paris. What was it like, and what's the experience like in a different country compared to domestic in the U.S.?
Oh, man. So I was living in and originally flying out to France. This is a little known little something that a lot of people don't know. But I was actually flying out to France for a girl. And
wow.
Up until the trip, she was like, okay, I'm not quite ready to, you know, take the relationship level, but you can come over, you know, you can still live with me and my, you know, live with me and my mom and my family for however long. So I was living in the countryside, actually. And the one thing that I noticed, I was in the countryside for about 3 weeks before I went down and stayed in the city for like a couple weeks, but just there are different cultural differences. Obviously, like in America, right, you're going to have a different culture on the East Coast versus the West Coast, and, you know, regards to music or in regards to how people act or how people behave, right? Like, you think about the South, you think about Southern hospitality. You go up North, people really aren't as friendly. You know, that's just something that is culturally ingrained in our minds. But over in France, man, it was a great experience. Regarding the culture, it really gave me a respect for food, for different ways of life, you know, for the more of the humble ways of life. You know, the girl I was staying with, her stepfather actually owns a farm and, you know, a vineyard and whatnot. And there's this one time that I'll remember this experience for the rest of my life. It was around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and we're walking. You know, the sun was beating down. It was like 70 degrees. It was beautiful, beautiful weather, a little bit overcast. You know, the hills in the distance, and we're walking through these vineyards, literally picking grapes off the vine, eating them. And for me, you know, being raised in Florida, I'm one of the first people in my family, like I'm the first person in my immediate family to ever travel out of country. And I was just like, wow, I'm literally eating French grapes in a French vineyard, 6,500 miles away from home. And I'm also getting a taste for the way of life. You know, we fail to remember that there are other people who, you know, they have to put food on our tables. And, you know, for being a first world country, too, like in a lot of regards, like there still has that old world mentality in different places, you know, different places over in France. But it was overall, man, an unforgettable experience.
No, it's great to hear. It's great that you had that. I think it's something that a lot of people talk about, right? The old world versus the new world. And it can mix people. Like you said, in the countryside, they have to mix both worlds. Otherwise, they can't suffice people with food. They can't suffice, in that case, grapes is a big wine supplier. It's all that domino and supply and chain effect, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking about wine, man, I had the pleasure of, you know, drinking plenty of good French wine. That was pretty cool because, like, man, I'm 19, and over in America, you have to be 21. So I'm not going to be, like, say that I was some angel. Like, no, I enjoyed it, and I was able to, you know, get a taste for – you know, just the different things. And the one interesting thing, though, talking from a business perspective about France.
Yeah, go for it.
What was that?
No, go for it.
Oh,
go for it.
Okay, yeah, for sure. The one thing that I was going to say is that in France, money is almost looked down upon. The one thing that I noticed is business, it is not a business-friendly country. Like, the tax percent. And because of that, you know, the prices have to be more expensive because the supplier and the vendor, they have to raise their prices in order to maintain the same profit because they're taxed so much. And so it's not really a business friendly culture. And the more money you make, you know, you're almost looked upon as a, you know, almost as selfish because you have all this money. Meanwhile, they're homeless. And it was just very interesting. And I remember the girl's mom, she was telling me, I asked her, I was like, how much money do you have to make in order to be considered, you know, upper class or be considered, you know, wealthy or happy? And she told me that, you know, making about 2,000 euros a month in the region that I was staying at would be enough to suffice you and enough for you to basically not complain. And that's only $2,200 in the US dollar, you know, right around $2,200. Wow. And that's barely minimum wage. You know, if you're working a full-time minimum wage job making $13, $14 an hour, or slightly above minimum wage, but you get what I'm saying, like a lower paying job, and you can barely live off of $2,200, you know, by yourself in America, depending on where you're at.
That is it. Now, would you say it's different for, let's say, a bigger city like Paris, or?
Well, yeah.
Or is it about the same? Yeah.
I really can't give you my honest opinion on that because I didn't have a chance to meet a lot of people in Paris. I was only in Paris for like a total of 24 hours my entire time in Paris.
Oh, okay.
I was actually living in the south of Paris in a smaller city, or south of France, rather, in a smaller city called Montpellier. And it's, you know, it's about 6 miles away from the Mediterranean. I did not get the chance to see it. I should have prioritized that a little bit more, but I'll be going back to Europe sometime in 2020. So I was living in a different city. It was in the south. And then I was also living in the countryside about an hour north of Montpellier. But in total, it would have been like an 8 or 9 hour car ride south of Paris.
Interesting. So, yeah, we don't. I would assume they have, you know, a little bit more higher standard because it is the city life. And I've been to Paris myself, and it's more hustle and bustle, kind of like the East Coast. And then you have certain sections where it's more West Coast, right? It's more relaxed. So just the way demographics work and the people. How are the people out there? Very friendly or open to your acquaintances?
This is opening up a segue for something that I would really love to talk about. You know, going up until the trip, I had a lot of people in my life tell me a bunch of stereotypes about, you know, French people and stuff like that. And it irritated me. It honestly irritated me because no one who was telling, or the people who were telling me these things have never traveled and have never been to France. Right. And so that really gave me a respect for how, you know, I'm not going to speak on something unless I've been able to go and actually experience it, do it, or I'm knowledgeable on the subject, right? Like, how can I speak about a people if I've never been to that place? But honestly, Kevin, the one thing I've noticed is people are people regardless of where you go. Honestly, like, they're the nicest people ever. You know, I might not have been able to speak fluently and be able to interact. I mean, a lot of them spoke English, and I was living with a buddy of mine. His name is Parker, who's an American student studying abroad. And I was living with him, so he was able to translate a lot for me. But people are people. And that's going to be the same no matter where you go. I mean, they're great, man. Like, the food is great. The people are great. Everything was great.
No, I got you. The culture, I think the culture overall is great. I think the European lifestyle, it's a lot of people value it. A lot of people retire there too. So, the other part. Going back to California now, what was your West Coast experience like?
Okay, I'll go ahead and do a little bit of a backstory as to how I ended up in California in the first place.
Yeah, go for it.
Back in 2018, I got connected with a guy through social media. His name is Devin, and he got me connected with another guy named Nolan. We were all entrepreneurial minded, and I was originally planning on moving out to California with Devin, with Nolan, and getting a place together. Those plans fell through. I still ended up taking the flight out to California. I booked it months in advance, and I was 18. I wasn't even 18 at the time. I was still 17. And I was turning 18 like right before my flight, and I was like, I'm gonna fly out, we're going to get a house together, we're going to go ahead and start up a couple businesses. One of the guys ended up backing out, things fell through, but I still had other arrangements in Arizona. The guys in Arizona I was talking to at the time, they ended up going MIA on me, and so I was stranded in California. So I sent out a tweet and I was like, hey, I'm in Cali, who else is here? Let's connect, let's meet up, let's network. And so my now friend Gabriel, he saw my tweet. He reached out to me. He's like, hey, I'm in Bakersfield. What part of Cali are you in? And I was like, I'm in Bakersfield. And it turns out the Barnes & Noble that he oftentimes goes to networking was literally 2 blocks away from my motel. So we ended up going and meeting for coffee, and he introduced me to his entire friend group. Well, fast forward a year later, I maintained contact with every single person I met in Bakersfield. And I was like, okay, I have a flight out to California. I was getting flown out for VidCon. VidCon is like this big convention for video creators and stuff like that. And so I was getting flown out. I had a round trip booked and everything. And I was reaching a point in my life, you know, mentally, I was going through a bunch of issues in my family life, in my personal life. Mentally, I just wasn't sure what I was doing. I was, you know, feeling extremely defeated. I was still in a network marketing company at the time, and my mind was just not in the right place. And I was talking to a friend, his name is John. And I was like, John, what am I going to do? And he's like, Isaac, you know exactly what to do. He's like, fly out and don't fly home. So I hit up my buddies in Bakersfield. I was like, hey, I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me crash on the floor and I'll help you guys with your businesses. I'll do whatever it takes. I need to leave. And so I ended up flying out to California. I literally missed my flight home on purpose. I went up to Bakersfield, which is a smaller city, about 400,000 people, about an hour and a half north of Los Angeles. And so I was living there for about two and a half months, and it was different. It was very, very different, man. You know, it introduced me to a lot of things that I've never been introduced to. It was good though; it was a learning experience for me. And for me, it's like I'm glad that I got those experiences out of the way now and learned and have a better understanding now of what I don't want to do in the future, who I don't want to be like, you know, the different things that I don't want to do. But it's literally, you know, it's the 19, 20-year-old college life party mentality. you know? And I remember I was like, I would never turn into one of those people. Like, I would never party. I would never do anything like that. And then guess what? I went out to California, and that's exactly what I did.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'll be honest about that, man. I don't believe in, you know, bullshitting or, you know, beating around the bush or anything like that. But it was honestly a very, very eye-opening experience in every regard.
No, I hear you. You got a lot to unpack there. But you make a great point, right? I think it's that first you're taking that sacrifice mentality, right? You know that you had to sleep on the floor, make it happen, even when things go through. But we'll talk about that in a second. So when you were in this party state, right, you were just going out there having fun. Would you say you lost yourself and that's what caused some of those turmoil? Or do you feel like it was just the way society wanted that to happen and you just were like, well, let me just do this and I'll get back to it eventually? So was that kind of the cause of some of those turmoils, or do you feel you got out of it now?
I feel like it was more so not knowing who I was. And I'm still young. Like, I'm still working on figuring out exactly what I want out of life. It's gotten a lot clearer over the past 2 years, don't get me wrong, but there are still different things that I need to fill in, you know, different holes that I need to, you know, figure out who I am. But flying out and getting introduced to lifestyle, it was more so, one, it was peer pressure, but I'm not going to put the blame on other people. But rather, I just didn't have the willpower to say no, and I didn't have the willpower to turn away from that. The people I was staying with, like, they weren't bad people, but they were in that lifestyle. They were business-minded, but they also had the mentality of, we work, we get money, therefore we owe it to ourselves to party, you know? And in actuality, that's not the right mentality to have, because if their goals are as big as they say they are, then they're so far behind that they don't deserve celebration, you know, by smoking weed or by getting drunk or getting wasted or hosting parties or doing all these different things. And so it really wasn't me finding myself. It wasn't doing any of that. It wasn't like a personal conflict. It was just like I needed to go through that to figure out that wasn't how I wanted to be.
I got you. Yeah. It sounds like they had that more work hard, play hard mentality, where it really should be work hard, play responsibly. Right. You know, you don't want to, too much of anything is no good. And at the same time, too much of a little and not doing enough of the good things doesn't evolve you and makes you a more developed and dynamic person.
Oh, that's a very powerful point. Very powerful point.
No, for sure, man. Definitely. And I was just going to say, so to the people this age, 19, 20, I'm also 20. So to the people in their late teens and early 20s, what do you think is the biggest lesson advice you can give for people still figuring themselves out and trying to find it?
This is actually not my advice. I'm one to go to other people for advice, but I have to be in a very low state in order to really go and reach out for advice. Like I have to be like super low. And I reached out to a buddy of mine when I was out in Cali, and he's an entrepreneur. He's in his 30s, and he's actually involved with network marketing. His name is Brendan DeSilis. He's from Australia. I've never met him in person, but the power of the internet is great. I've never met him in person, Kevin, but we're having this conversation. I feel extremely blessed to be in the 21st century. And I asked him, I was like, Brendan, how do I avoid peer pressure? Like, what do I do? What do I do to combat that? And he's like, Isaac, the one thing that you have to understand is that whenever you let another person pressure you into doing something, you are no longer in control of your life. You are no longer in control of your decisions. You're letting another person direct you and control you by influencing your decisions. And that's basically what he told me. And from there, I was like, I need to be in control of my life. Therefore, I need to be able to say no. I need to be able to hold my own. But it's not easy to do that. It's not easy to build up the willpower to turn away, you know, whenever someone passes you the joint to say, I don't want to smoke. Whenever someone passes you the bottle to say, I don't want to sip. You know, that's not easy. And I thought it would be easy. And I was ignorant. I didn't know. And looking back now, one, I would say try to avoid those situations if that's not the route that you want to take in life. But otherwise, just have the awareness in the back of your mind to know that if you're letting another person pressure you into doing something that you genuinely don't want to do or know that you'll regret later, that you're giving that person the reins over your life. You know, they're steering where you're going. And that's probably not the right path you want to go.
Right. I think any type of pressure or any type of decision that's not your own, it's just going to create that buildup and like, what do I do? And it's not really you. You have to make that choice and make that conscious decision, as your buddy said, to get back that power and make sure you steer that ship for sure.
Absolutely.
A great point, man. So now that's a great point transitioning to Mashman Media. What was it like making that decision to starting from the ground up?
It was something that I've had in the back of my mind for over a year now. I was, you know, whenever I first got started with, you know, entrepreneurship, whenever I first got started, you know, figuring out that I was an entrepreneur by nature, I had the idea of Mashman Media. Like in my senior year of high school, I started up the Twitter account. I got the handles. I was like, all right, I'm going to do a media company, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And I was taking the serial entrepreneur approach, and I put it on the back burner. And fast forward, I was building up my personal brand over the past 2 years, you know, building up my name on Twitter, building up my audience on, you know, various social media platforms. And I was learning a lot. You know, for not knowing what I was doing, I was teaching myself. And by me not knowing the direction I was going in, it's helped me out tremendously today. And so by building up my personal brand, I realized that I had the ability to do that for another person. And going out to California, I was like, I'm not going to do network marketing. And so it was like, am I going to get a job in California or am I going to do my own business? But then I was like, what business am I going to do? So I had the idea. I was like, media. And a buddy of mine, I'm not going to give his name, but he went ahead and gave me the Tai Lopez 67 Steps course. And so I started going through that course a little bit. It was a course for email marketing and you know, teaching you a little bit about social media. So I was like starting to study it a little bit more, and I was getting a grasp for everything. And I just realized, like, I was like, okay, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge. But if I already have a skill, now it's about how can I make money? And so I was like, I have the skill. So now it's about, you know, just finding the clientele. And I already had the networking skill. So it was just putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And it's just fell into place, and I'm having a better understanding of, you know, what direction I'm taking my company now. Like just, you know, recently in the past week, I've decided that I want to put a focus on a couple different services rather than offer a wide range of services like every other media company. I'm going to be a little bit more niche focused, you know? So it's been good. It's been good. It's been a process, but trial and error, definitely.
Would you say trial and error, and the fact that you are new, unknown, you have that fresh perspective, gives you an advantage rather than someone who knows everything and fears over complacency?
Definitely. I feel like by knowing that I don't know everything, and I have this attitude that there's always going to be more to learn. Like I know for sure. A fact that I should always be growing, and no matter how old I get, how wise I get, or any of those things, like there's always something more to learn, to grow into, to evolve into. And so I feel like I almost have the advantage. You know, I feel honestly that I have the advantage because I don't know everything, that there's so much that I can learn and then experience and do at the same exact time.
Yeah, you make a great point. I think the fact that you can be flexible too in growth and learning, you learn at your own pace, you learn at your own, you don't have to be structured by a school schedule or someone else's meetings. It gives you that upper edge, and it makes you feel powerful for sure.
100%. And, you know, I will say if I went to school, you know, I would still be, I would just now be going into my junior year of school, you know, maybe. If not, I would be ending my sophomore year, and I would have been stuck in a dorm room. I wouldn't have been able to have any of the experiences, and I would still be learning the electives and going through the courses that will never help me in life. And just by being, you know, self-educated and self-taught, like, you know, this is a good topic to bring up about France. Again, like I talked to a lot of students over there going to business school, and they're like, how did you learn? Like, you have your own company, you have your own business. Like, how did you learn everything? And I was just like self-taught. I studied, I learned, I looked at mentors, I read books, I did what I needed to do. I experienced it. And they're over here doing things that aren't going to help them in the future. You know, like I was like, I'm going to go over there and have to take an elective or a course over something that I'll never have to use again. And so by being in control of my life and having that flexibility, as you mentioned, I'm able to control what areas I want to focus in, what areas of marketing I want to learn, because there's so many different avenues of marketing. Like, why am I going to study the broad base when I could focus on a couple different things? Like, I don't need to learn how to use billboards for marketing. Like, that's not my focus.
Right. That's outdated.
Well, yeah. But that's something you'd learn, you know?
No, you make a great point, man. I think a lot of people in this generation are going to realize that. And hopefully they say, all right, let's forget the system. Let's take our own path. And you mentioned a big point, experience, right? I think that's the number one thing. You can't really do anything or say you're successful or you learn from it without experiencing it. I think experience is the new way of teaching yourself. What's the biggest experience you've had so far in this journey or moment that you could say helped define you in the business?
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good question. I know.
Damn, man. All right. Okay, that's that stopped me in my tracks, because my mind immediately went to a couple of different things, and they're not necessarily business oriented. Is it okay if I mention like maybe two or three?
Two, three is great. It's fine.
Okay. One of them I would have to say is going over to France. And I know that because of like things didn't quite work out, a lot of people would be like, oh my God, I bet you regret. You should have never went. It's the complete opposite. I'm so grateful I made the trip. But traveling internationally and seeing that just a small portion of a small country, literally Texas is bigger than France, you know, like just seeing a small portion of how other people live and that there's an entire world to be explored, that really opened up my eyes to the future. I've always loved to travel, but that took me to another level. And that's a personal experience that will help me in a business way and just in general and in so many ways in the future I can't even begin to grasp. So one, it was international travel. You know, just being able to say that I'm the first person in my family to travel internationally is huge. That's something I hold close to my heart and I respect a lot. There's another experience that I can't even legally speak about that experience. I want to speak about it, but I can't speak about that on the podcast.
That's fine.
There's another one though. I will say that goes back to network marketing. I was in a network marketing company, as I mentioned, and although I never saw a lot of success, I had a lot of experience. I had a lot of mentorship because of it. But there's this one trip. I ended up taking a 16-hour bus ride from Jacksonville, Florida, up to New York City. It wasn't even Greyhound. It was this Chinese bus company that I've never heard of before. And so I took this bus company or this bus up to New York City. I was in New York City for 4 hours. I got picked up by these dudes I've never met in person before, but I was building a network marketing company with. They pick me up. We drive out to Chicago. You know, it's a 20-hour car ride. We pick up some other people in Chicago we've never met before. And then we ride up to Minneapolis for this one, for this event, to see the vice president of the company speak. The vice president is like, he just turned 30 years old this year. This was back in 2018.
Okay, last year. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was, you know, it was last May, actually. Wow. It's crazy. For being on this journey for 2 years, I feel like I've been on this journey for 20. And so we end up going and seeing the speaker eat. And I told him, I was like, you know, I walked up to him, I introduced myself to him, I was like, hey, you know, my name is Isaac, thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm picking his brain with questions. You know, people are trying to take pictures of his Rolex watch, and I'm over here talking to him, and I want to pick his brain. I was like, you're worth $30 million, man. Like, I want to know what you know. I don't care about the watch. The watch will come in the future. And I'm talking to him, and he wants to know a little bit about me. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm from Jacksonville. You know, I ended up traveling and taking a bus, da 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 da. And he's like, so how much time have you traveled? And I was like, at the end of this trip, it's going to be about 70 hours of total travel time. And he was so blown. He was blown away by it. He invited me and the other teammates out to dinner. And so we went out to dinner later that night for sushi. And, you know, he literally spent over $1,000 on 20, 30 people to eat sushi that night. And that was like an eye-opening experience for me. I'm not driven by money, Kevin. And this is something I never want people to think I am. Like, money's great. It is, right. It's not necessarily the money that's great, but it's what you can do with the money. It's about having the ability to, you know, treat other people out or to help other people, you know, and to invest in other companies, to be able to give to charities and whatnot. But just being able to sit, you know, in his presence and see this dude who's under 30 years old, who has success, who has, you know, influence, who has, you know, the different things in life that I look to, that was a really eye-opening experience, because I was like, wow, this is within reach. This is within, you know, this is something I could have, you know, it's possible because growing up, I didn't have anyone in my life who I could look to as a mentor like that, you know? And so seeing that, I was like, okay, this is someone who, you know, I can kind of take to, or I would be okay switching spots with him, you know?
No, I got you. It's more of a humbling experience more than anything, you know, that not only is it within reach, but it can happen at any moment, right? As long as you put enough consistent grind, 1 year, like you said, could be 20 years worth of value.
Definitely.
If you do it right. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. I think never underestimate the power of time, and never underestimate the power of just willpower in general. As long as you put the grind in, things will happen. So that leads me to another interesting topic here, especially in the entrepreneur world. Do you feel like materialism is becoming too much of a thing? Or do you feel like people are starting to realize that happiness and investing in other people will become more of a trend because of the way the world works now?
You know, I'm very torn because of that question. Because, okay, you know, you follow Gary Vee, I follow Gary Vee, right?
Of course.
And Gary Vee's been speaking a lot on empathy. He's been speaking a lot on happiness. You have a lot of these other mentors, a lot of these other gurus, whatever you want to call them, you know, big name social media entrepreneurs and influencers who are now speaking on spirituality,
right,
and all these different things. So in that regard, I feel like people's eyes are really being opened, but I don't think people quite understand what it means to be spiritually happy or to be content or to be, you know, happy with their experiences and stuff like that. And then at the other side, you have Instagram, which, as Jordan Belfort says, the Wolf of Wall Street, he says it's almost become like an echo chamber, right? To where you go and you like one picture, you like that picture of the Rolex watch, and the next thing you know, you see two Rolex watches on your Explore feed, and then you see pictures of cars, and then you see pictures of houses, and you know, the algorithm literally is based to keep you on the page. It's based to show you things that you're interested in. And because of that, you get so consumed by the thought of having these nice things, you fail to understand the beauty behind the process of getting to that point. And a lot of people, you know, it's unfortunate too that people only want to work towards the materialistic things because, yes, you know, you can't take money with you when you're dead. Like, you can't. But at the same exact time, you know, having money, in my opinion, is a great thing. Just because, again, what you can do with money. And growing up, I'm not having money. And not having the money to get the things taken care of that I needed to get taken care of, it opened up my eyes to, like, in the future for my kids, I don't want them to have the same problems I had to have growing up.
Right.
So it's really like a double-edged sword. I feel like some people are learning, some people are never going to change, and it's just something that we have to watch. There's no way to really measure it.
Right. There's no exact, you know, figure that's going to say, well, this happened at this moment and this time. Yeah. So I think it's really just perspective and how the world and the next generation see it. It'll be on us at the end of the day because we're Gen Z, and we'll talk a little about that in about 5 minutes. But just the way everyone's cooperating, I think, nowadays, and how everyone thinks with algorithms and whatnot is fascinating. I guess we can bring up this next thing. I know Instagram said, I don't know if you heard, I'm sure you heard about it, Instagram's going to take away the like button.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on that? You think it's going to help mental health and engagement as far as real fans?
Oh, man, I feel like I might get a little bit of backlash for this, but I honestly don't want to really speak on it too much because it's not something I know. But if, in my opinion, I feel like influencer marketing is about to change. Over the past 6 months, it's been 8 months. Man, this year has flown by. I don't know where 2019 has gone. I'm talking to you and I'm like, what the hell, man? A buddy of mine introduced me to an app called Lasso. Back at the beginning of 2019, and I got on the app, and it's Facebook's competitor app to TikTok. So I got on the app and I just grinded away, and I ended up becoming verified on the app. It took a lot of hard work, took a lot of dedication, but it was possible. And because of that app, I was able to make a lot of great connections with influencers. I was able to really get a taste of their life, get a taste into the way that they create content into those different avenues. And so it's kind of close to my heart now because it almost concerns me of how this is going to affect the entire influencer marketing side of things. Because something we look at is likes, right? You go to a page and you look at the likes. But there's so many different things that it's going to affect. It's just I'm intrigued and excited yet scared at the same time to see the long-term effects and see how it really affects us. For example, too, there are a lot of people who bought, you know, their accounts or with fake likes, with fake followers and all those other things. So with us not being able to see the likes on their post, there could be someone who has 200,000 followers, but because we can't see their likes, we don't know that they're only getting 1,000 likes per post when in reality they should be getting 10 or 20,000. So that means that it would be a lot easier to fake the follower counts. Holy crap, dude. I just realized what I just said, because that is something that no one's mentioned. I have not heard anyone mention that, but it's going to be a lot easier to fake those accounts. When it comes to actual mental health though, I don't know. Honestly, I don't. That's not something that I've read up a lot on when it comes to social media and the long-term effects. It's not something that ever really affected me. And I really never had anyone in my life who was like, oh my God, look at the Instagram likes. Like that, that was never the case.
Right. No, I think you make a great point. We're entering the unknown world. I think it's like just like your business, right? We're in unknown times. We really don't know what's going to happen. The only thing we do know for sure, there is going to be something that involves a less engagement in a sense, or less analytics, and we'll deal with it as we deal with it. And you mentioned Lasso. What was it like getting that grind on Lasso? What was that that not only Grant, what was it like getting verified? It felt good, or did you feel like it was just hard work, or how was it?
Okay, when I first got started with social media and stuff, I made it my goal to get verified on Instagram. You know, I'm still looking for the check mark. I'm not working for the check mark, but I know that it's going to come with time, just because I feel like it's almost like an accomplishment. You know, the same way that I like a Rolex, I don't feel like a Rolex is something that I want to buy to say that, oh, look at me, I have a Rolex, but rather as an accomplishment to me. I love watches. I've always loved Rolexes. And it's like, it's going to be, Isaac, I got to this point. You know, I earned this. And so for that, the verification on Lasso was a star. I became a part of their star creator program. And
interesting.
Having that star was like, it's cool. It's very humbling too, because I had to take a step back and I was like, you know what? I'm in a position now that other people want to be at. I was literally just like in that position a couple of days ago of wanting to have that star next to my name. And now that I have it, it's like, it's literally the same exact thing, but it almost like, it was good. It was like, it was humbling mainly. It was really humbling, but it also was a testament to me, to myself, as a way to like, okay, I worked for this and I made it happen. So what else and what values can I take from this? What experience can I take from this, or what lessons rather that I, what can I take and implement into other areas of my life?
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
No, I see what you're saying. Exactly. I think it's sometimes those accomplishments, it's just not one streamlined thing that happens. It's a domino effect of what can I incorporate in personal growth? What can I incorporate in my business? What can I incorporate in my travel? It humbles you. It respects the game. And it shows your growth mindset is always going to be developing. And other people will see that too, which is always good.
Absolutely.
And now, the other thing is, I'm talking to a number one photo user in the world at one point. How was it like getting number one on Photo Man? What was that grind like, just understanding that? Is that another accomplishment you can do the same thing with? And
okay. Photo, I'm watching what I say about them. I'm watching what I say. The leaderboard is not based off of followers. It's not based off of entire likes or any of that. The photo leaderboard is based off of how many likes you get per day. So for that day, I ended up getting the most likes. But Photo is not like, it's not a big app that has, whenever Photo first launched, I was on the app within 48 hours of its launch. So I had a huge advantage over people who just recently got on the app, because I already had more followers. I had more content. I had more likes to begin with. But again, it was like, I told myself, I was like, I'm gonna go ahead and hit number one. Yeah. Like I was like, I'm gonna do it. And I made it happen, you know? So again, it was showing me that I could do something that I put my mind to. And it's really, but then again, man, it's not about the likes. It's not about the followers, but more so it's about real people. Like we fail to realize that these people who are following us and these people who are liking our content, they're real freaking people living real lives. Like, think about it. Whenever you're driving on the highway, you don't think about what the person next to you or what the person in the car next to you is doing. But in reality, that person is gone on their way to their home, to their work, to their job. You know, they have a life of their own that they're living. Every single person driving on, you know, I-95 has their own life, you know, and it's the same exact way with the people on Instagram, the people on social media, and being able to meet so many people through social media. Like, I've made it my goal, like my social media relationships, my goal is to make them physical. Like, my goal is to meet that person in person, face to face. And every single person I've met is the same exact person who they portray on social media. You know, there's a stigma that people on social media put up a front, and that might be true with some people. But overall, like, the people I've met are real people. You know, the person I flew out to and, you know, all the way across the world to in France was the same exact girl I was talking to. You know, the person I was living with is the same exact person I got connected with on Facebook. And I totally went on an entire rabbit trail based around that one question, man. But
be good, yeah.
Photo was – it was good. It was a good experience.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think you make a great, interesting point. The fact is, the matter is, the most people can see what is real and what isn't real. And the fact that you had that vision to meet all these people who give you back their time, that give you back these relationships, I think it's going to be a new trend. And do you feel like we're going to see more people take that and have more physical meetups thanks to social media, because that's more of a pillar rather than the all the end all?
100%. 100%. But I also feel okay, I feel like it's going to imagine two lines, right? Two parallel lines, but they're now going in the opposite direction. I feel like on one regard, whereas social media at one time was viewed as something that, you know, only, like, I remember growing up, my mom was like, social media is only for creeps. You know, there are nothing but pedophiles on the internet. And obviously there are going to be some, but like, that's not the internet as a whole. But the internet was something that scared a lot of people. A lot of people didn't understand what the internet was and what the power was. You know, you would be afraid of the thought of meeting, you know, another person who you've never met before, right? Like face to face. It was scary. You know, online dating, for example. Nowadays, you know, this is something Gary Vee said, like, I'm not trying to use his analogy, but it's like, you know, 20 years ago, the thought of your daughter getting into the car with a random stranger was like something was absurd, out of this world. And now, you know, you order an Uber for your 14-year-old daughter to get in this car with a dude who you've never met, you know?
Yeah.
And so so on one side of the coin, I feel like more physical reaction or more physical meetups or relationships are going to happen. But at the same exact time, from the mental health side, more people are going to be stuck behind their cell phone screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's going to be some people, you know, some physical relationships, and then the other group of people are going to be homebodies or you know, not know how to interact face to face.
You make a great point, man. I think it's going to be a mix. You know, it depends. Like, certain people just like the home field advantage of the internet. And some people like those real face-to-face, have those upfront conversations because you can get more done or you feel it's just going to impact their relationship better. So whatever perspective it is, I think it's going to work. I think both will work. As long as we make it work as a society and we don't have any major problems, it'll work as is and both can stand on its own, which is great.
100%. And, well, and Kevin, I do want to mention, too, that I think just the fact that if Instagram shut down tomorrow, mm-hmm. can you imagine the long-term effect or just the immediate effect of it going and literally, like, disappearing? Like, there have been multiple instances over the past year where Instagram shut down, you know, in different areas around the world due to server issues and shortages and stuff. And the internet went crazy. You know, everyone went to Twitter. And everyone's like, oh, my God, Instagram. But social media has become such a large part of our lives. Like, it's difficult to imagine a world without it now. You know, businesses rely on social media for marketing, for media work, you know, for surveys, for feedback, for all these different things. And it's like, if the internet disappeared tomorrow, I feel like this would be a crazy documentary. You know, you know that history documentary where it's like 300 years after man or after man, whatever. Imagine a series after social media. Like, what would the long-term effects be?
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine. Like, you know, the fact of the matter is, I think, well, this is probably one of the last questions before we're actually getting close to the time. Do you think diversifying, just instead of, I think it's something important, instead of just diversifying on one app, do you feel like diversifying on many apps is going to help the game because you feel like you can get more connections? Or what's your view on diversification of social?
I'm all for diversification, man. And, you know, working with clients now, I'm starting to work with a lot of artists and a lot of musicians. Like, I'm getting rappers on LinkedIn. Why would a rapper be on LinkedIn? Because everyone else isn't. You have to do what other people aren't doing. And the way I see it, man, is the more platforms you're on, the higher chances of other people seeing your platform and getting connected with you there are. You know, and it's not a numbers game, but to an extent it is. And so for me, I'm like, if I'm able to get on one platform and be able to connect with one group of person, you know, and be able to connect with another person here, like, it's worth it in the end, right? Because I value real connections. I value real people. I value people for their time because I know that, you know, them spending time listening to my podcast or, you know, reading my blog or looking at my website, like, I'm taking and I'm asking them for their time. And so I'm all for diversification on all platforms, man. And another thing is, you know, especially if you're a content creator such as myself, such as you, mm-hmm. we're trying to get a message out there. We're trying to provide value for these people. And the one person who's on Twitter isn't going to be on Facebook, but the person who is on Facebook might not be on Twitter or might not be on Instagram. So by being across all these platforms, it's not only helping our brand image, it's not only helping us, you know, grow with you know, our personal brands, it's helping get more value out there, get more exposure, help more people. And from there, you know, it's just a matter of continual growth.
You make a great point, man. I think, and you make a very interesting point, how I think anywhere, right? Anywhere to get exposure, rappers on LinkedIn is exposure. No matter where you put it, it's still a chance to get exposed as long as you put yourself out there. And as long as you try, you can always grow and improve it for sure.
100%.
And I guess we'll go to this last question. It's been a great interview so far. Thank you for taking your time.
Thank you for having me, man. Like I said,
Absolutely. Last one. So what is your plan for the end of 2019 to finish strong and the next 5 years look like with not only mastering business, but traveling and all that?
Well, I just got back into Jacksonville, man. And it's very weird. It is honestly very strange for me. And this is going to be one of those interviews where I'm not 100% on my game right now. And I'm kind of curious to listen back to this and be like, okay, this is a little bit different than what I'm used to. excuse me. I should add some water. Give me one second.
There you
go. Okay. Jeez. So I'm back in Jacksonville, and this is the first time being back in town in nearly 4 months. It just marked 4 months like today, the 11th. I don't even know what day it is. Regardless, man, the next couple of months leading up until 2020, I'm looking to be the best version of myself. You know, flying back from France, I was like, I need to get physically fit. I need to be in the best shape of my life, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, every single avenue of my life. And I'm working to build up a lot of momentum into 2020. I'm not to say New Year's resolutions or anything like that, but it's a new decade. It's a new year, obviously, but it's just a new opportunity. It's like a fresh start. But I'm trying to make the most out of today to build up that momentum going into the new year, because everyone's waiting until 2020 to get started, right? People are waiting until 2020 to stop drinking or to stop smoking. Why are you going to procrastinate? Do it now. Stop now. Start now. Whatever you need to do. But my goal ultimately, man, is just to continue growing my media company, to continue growing as an individual, as a man, as an entrepreneur, to have a better understanding of who I am, what I want out of life. And then, you know, by the end of 2020, it's a very hefty goal, but I want to have two, real estate properties. I want to have two properties that are generating residual cash flow, whether it's an Airbnb room, you know, a booking.com, an apartment, a condo, whatever I need to do. I want to have two properties by the end of next year. And honestly, I want to just get to the point where I'm able to travel whenever I want. I want to be able to help whoever I want, to be able to give back to my mom, to my family, to the people who believed in me. You know, it's not about me anymore. And it's not about me. It's not about my family, but it's about, you know, the millions of people I could potentially help and give back to in the future.
That's it, brother. I think that's a great way to end it, right? Giving back in the future, as you said in the beginning, with the money aspect and the mentor you met. Giving back, it's not so much, you know, the greed of it. It's the art of helping people and making – and always treat yourself with respect first. You can always treat others second, but make sure yourself is in line. Then you can always help others. Just like they say in the oxygen flight mask on those flights.
Right.
Do your mask first and then do others second. Well, that's a great way to end it, my man. Thank you so much for taking time. You just want to plug your social handle so people can find you on the internet?
Yeah, definitely, Kevin. And I would also love to mention something real quick. I started up a Facebook group a couple months ago called Team Legacy. You've probably seen a little bit about it on social media, but Team Legacy is a Facebook group for entrepreneurs, for, you know, people from all walks of life, for movers and shakers. This is not a sales pitch. The group is not meant for selling at all. It's not going to be monetized in that regard. But it's genuinely just for people to network and collaborate. And earlier on, we mentioned, you know, face-to-face interactions. My goal with the Facebook group Team Legacy is to get it to the point where, hey, Team Legacy, I just landed in Chicago. What other member is in Chicago? Let's get coffee. Let's collaborate. Let's talk business. Let's get to know people. You know, let's get to know each other. So if you're interested in Team Legacy, reach out to me on social media. And you can reach out to me at Isaac Mashman on basically all platforms, at Isaac Mashman, M-A-S-H-M-A-N, and go to isaacmashman.com. And I also have my own podcast, which Kevin will have to get you on for an episode sometime in the next month, sometime in the next couple of months, called The Hustler's Choice Podcast, also available on all platforms. But, man, it's been a pleasure being on, honestly.
Absolutely, bro. Thank you so much for your time. As always, to the UPE listeners out there, appreciate you guys giving back to the guests. And as ourselves as well. Have a great one, brother. Thank you. Keep it easy.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on the United Podcast Experience. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe so that way you can stay up to date with all of our guests. Check the description for all the links pertaining to everything discussed today. And if you want to be promoted or know somebody who should be, reach out to us at the United Promotion on Instagram. And be sure to follow us there as well to stay up to date with all of our guests.